Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 25. This, Dave, we might want to title this episode, The Beatdown by the Texans and the Walking Wounded.
Oh, yeah. The Mike Tomlin press conference just finished probably about 45 minutes or so ago, and what a list of walking wounded indeed it is. We were kind of, you know, there was some word out there. James Harrison had that eye injury in the game against the Texans. And
and it looked like he just took a finger in the eye.
He had some blurred vision is what it was reported, I guess. Yeah. And then, you know, there was some speculation, maybe a concussion. But Tomlin said today, right orbital fracture around his eye, and he'll have surgery on Wednesday and be out several weeks. What a blow.
Yeah, that's a big blow. I was watching that game with some folks, and we were having a conversation, and I don't know if we'll see this continue. But, you know, my first reaction when I saw that I thought he took a finger in the eye was, I'm just curious why virtually every guy in the league doesn't wear a shield.
Yeah, that's a good point. At least even a clear one. You know, some of them like those tinted ones. I think Tomlinson from the from the Jets, the running back there, for all those years he's worn that. I'm surprised as well, too, you know, because you're bound to get a finger or a leg or something every once in a while to come up in there. But I don't know, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and I guess hindsight and James Harrison, he won't be seeing hindsight for a little while.
Yeah, let's go through. Before we get into the game and the recap of that, just a couple notes. My travel. I apologize. We didn't get this up on Monday, but probably just as well now with all the latest breaking news here, the press conference and the injuries. So our schedule this week will be Tuesday, Thursday. We're looking to have a beat writer from the Tennessean with us. So we'll go Tuesday, Thursday. That fits his schedule, and then we'll have our game preview and our picks on Friday. But why don't you run through the general list of injuries? There's some names on there that maybe we didn't expect to see. I guess the good news is the walking wounded of last week generally seem to be making progress, and they're looked to be available this Sunday. But the list of guys who aren't going to be available Sunday is a long one.
Well, yeah, let's start with Roethlisberger first. You know, there was talk about maybe there was a fracture in that foot. X-rays and MRI says nothing broken in the left foot. But, you know, he's probably going to be limited in the early portions of practice this week. Tomlin expects him to go. I expect him to go, too. Charlie Batch was pretty much named. You know, Tomlin pretty much said he will be the backup this week. He will probably get the extra snaps this week in practice and be ready if needed. But Roethlisberger looks good to go. Back to the Harrison thing real quick. Lawrence Timmons will flip outside now to the right outside linebacker spot. Larry Foote will assume the back role of Timmons inside. So, you know, you got a couple of, some flip-flopping around there for sure. Jason World, you probably might wonder, well, with Harrison out, how about Jason World's stepping into that right outside role? Well, he's got a quad strain a left quad strain, and Tomlin pretty much termed him as doubtful for this week. So more walking wounded. Cortez Allen has a right ankle sprain that makes him questionable. Casey Hampton has a right shoulder contusion and probably limit him in the early week of practice. I expect he'll be able to go on Sunday. Rashard Mendenhall has a right hamstring strain, and that's going to probably limit him in practice early this week. Another running back, Mawaldi Moore, has a left ankle sprain. He's in a boot right now, and Tomlin described that as severe, so he's going to be questionable. I doubt he suits up. That means Jonathan Dwyer will definitely get a helmet this week. Rashard, you know, I guess it all depends on practice, how that goes there. I'm willing to bet that he, even if he plays, it won't be much. I bet Isaac Redman gets the bulk of the work there. Aaron Smith has a right midfoot sprain, and he's extremely questionable this week. And let's see, Jonathan Scott, Doug Legursky, and Brett Kiesel, as you mentioned, the walking wounded from last week, they all are expected to return to the starting lineup this week. And Bryant McFadden, you know, he's Lord knows what's going on there. But even if he is suited up, Tomlin made it sound like William Gay and Keenan Lewis are the guys out there, you know, in the secondary that McFadden will be watching from the sideline.
Yeah, so that is a long list. I guess we talk about Kiesel coming back. If he, for some reason, weren't available, it means Cam Hayward might get his first career start. You talked about the running backs. If those two guys are both down, then the Steelers may have to go to the waiver wire, or I'm trying to remember who's on the practice squad. They got a back on the practice squad. They got the kid from Wisconsin, my man Clay.
Yeah, they also brought in Tristan Davis per Scott Brown today for a physical. It sounds like he's going to be signed to the practice squad only, though. And yeah, I would not really expect a move to the 53-man roster this week at all. Unless Mendenhall can't go at all, then I guess you could see John Clay activated. But when you do that, you got to release somebody. So I think they're going to be real cautious with that. Unless they put somebody on IR, which I don't see that happen. But I would expect Tristan Davis, kid, you know, from a couple years ago out of Auburn, to be signed to the practice squad this afternoon. A player will, of course, have to be released from the practice squad to make room for him. And I think they're bringing him in to try to simulate Chris Johnson and what he does in kind of the look team, as they like to call it.
Yep. So all sorts of issues. Obviously, the most important one is James Harrison. The Steelers have drafted over the years for linebacking depth. They do have linebacking depth. Just a bad break here for Jason Worlds in terms of the timing of his injury, because it would look like he would get his first career start at outside linebacker. So Timmons goes outside. It'd be interesting, without getting ahead of ourselves, it'd be interesting to see when Worlds is healthy, if they move Timmons back inside or if they're going to like him out there and stay with Larry Foote inside. The Roethlisberger injury, the list of severity here, I guess, is obviously Harrison first because he's definitely out. Then you've got Ben, you got Aaron Smith now, and now you really just have to say Aaron Smith, you know, his career is on its last legs. If this is more than a 1 week injury, I don't know what you do with him. He is, I don't think he's looked good on the field, and now hurt again. That's bad news. I don't know who else jumps out at you on that list. Mawaldi Moore, again, looked good in the game, late in the game, doing some good stuff. When Tomlin describes both those guys, Smith and Moore, as you know, very likely to be out, it sounds like. It always makes me think that could very well be more than a one-week thing.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the depth on the defensive line, David, and you know, you've got Steve McClendon and Chris Hoke are primarily inside guys. Now Hoke can play, you know, some outside technique there if needed, but he's not a guy that you're going to count on for 20, 30 snaps a game. You know, you could very well see, you know, a guy like Corbin Bryant activated off the practice squad for bodies, especially if, you know, depending on Kiesel's status. Kiesel evidently passed a lot of his run tests lately, and he's missed the last couple games, so you would think it's about time for him to get back from that knee sprain there. But, and Kiesel, you know, what the talk's going to be, David, and has been for a while with Aaron Smith, is, boy, what a decision now to keep him around with that $6 million price tag, you know, especially with due to all the injuries and strapped against cap money as they are right now. They could have gotten away with, you know, about a 1.6 charge on Aaron Smith if they would have released him and re-signed him, you know, at a lower rate perhaps. But everybody's going to point to this, especially, as you said, if it's a long-term injury. He really is tying up a lot of money that could have been used elsewhere.
Yeah, and when we talk about roster spots, all of a sudden, the first guy that comes to mind, you say, if they've got to drop somebody from the 53-man, I got to think Bryant McFadden's a guy who is on edge right now. They obviously don't have a ton of depth at corner, but the fact that he can't get back or hasn't gotten back just means I can't see somebody signing him necessarily on an off week. So he's a guy who's at risk. I think you'd rather not cut some of your young drafted guys, and I can't see them necessarily, you know, they could obviously get rid of an offensive lineman if they get healthy, but they get enough injuries on the offensive line, I can't see them doing that either.
Well, you know, McFadden, even though Well, for one thing, I think Arizona, with all the injuries that they have, Ray Horton would snap McFadden up. Their secondary is a mess over there with the Cardinals, so I would expect him to probably go back there if he was released. The bad thing about it is McFadden's salary is guaranteed, you know?
Yep. Everybody, all these guys now, I guess, there's not going to be any cap relief. Let's just put it that way.
Right. So, I mean, if you release a guy, you're still going to pay McFadden. The good thing about it is not much as far as a signing bonus to carry over, into next year. So it wouldn't be that big of a hit dead money wise. But yeah, I mean, he might very well be the one to be let go, because as you said, you don't want to release any of these young players, and unless you put somebody on IR, you need a bigger roster.
Yep. Well, let's talk about the game. What there is to talk about. You couldn't have a game start off worse for the Steelers. The Texans drop the opening kickoff, get back on it, and then hold the ball for 11 minutes and pretty much have their way with the Steelers, to the point where they had two holding penalties, including one, three holding penalties if you include the one on the kickoff, and they just drove it 90 yards right down the Steelers' throat, converted a couple long third downs, but basically looked like they could run at will. Arian Foster back in there had a very nice game, obviously, and getting 5 yards. A lot of the stretch cutback plays that the Steelers have had trouble with, and they ran right over the Steelers' left side, right over Aaron Smith and Lamar Woodley.
Yeah, 19 play drive, I think 115 yards actually.
Right.
Gained.
Exactly, because of the penalty. I mean, we were almost laughing in the bar. Watching it going, when have we ever seen this?
Yeah, I can't. It's been a long time, perhaps maybe back in the Tim Lewis days, and I'm dating myself there. But 8 first downs, I think, on a drive, just methodically chewed up the clock, just gashing the middle of the Steelers' defense. It looked like Hampton and Smith were so concerned about getting cut that they were turning away and not staying square to the defensive line, just pushed off the line of scrimmage. We mentioned in the preview, that Texans offensive line and that zone blocking, machine of theirs, as I'd like to call it, because it moves just like that. They've got, they used a lot of two tight end sets as well in there, and a lot of three tight end personnel as well, with that Casey kid lined up as fullback a lot. Boy, they just blew them off the ball, and you had to think. I know I thought after that long drive, he kept showing several shots of Ben on the sideline waiting to get into the game. But what was that, 10:55, I guess, that ended in a touchdown, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, crap, man, here we go.
Yeah, it was a tough first half. Look, from there, obviously, things got better. And, in fact, I think there is something positive to take away from this game in the second half. The Steelers looked much better in the second half, but look, if you can't run the ball and you're getting beat by the run, we've seen in this league, it's a quarterback league, blah, 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 all that stuff. But the fact of the matter is you still need to be strong on both lines. And that's not what we expect from the Steelers. We know the problems with the offensive line. They've been there for years, but the defensive line has not been a problem. And that is something new. And that's, I'll just say it again. I've said it, 2 weeks in a row now. I think Aaron Smith and Lamar Woodley, again, no shows. And in that opening drive, that was really apparent.
Yeah, Timmons was kind of absent from this game as well. Didn't really make a huge impact. Thank God Troy was there. He came to play. Harrison did not have his best game either. They were really concentrating on getting a couple of bodies on him as well and taking him out. The secondary played well, but hey, let's face it. When you run the ball, you don't have to pass the ball. And the Steelers, and I think we're missing too. Despite the score of this ball game, the Steelers caught a lot of breaks as far as flags. Penalties by the Texans. They also dodged the blocked field goal to end the half there that was returned, and the Texans had a stupid block in the back penalty there that negated that on top of it. But, you made an interesting point, David, about, running the football there. You can get away with not having a good running game as long as your offensive line can pass protect, and you can have a quarterback pick people apart. You know, the Packers kind of proved this last year. They were horrible running the football, but they were able to get good protection, and Aaron Rodgers could just sit back there and make the plays with the good quality wide receiver crew that they have. This line with the Steelers, I have watched a lot of bad ones over the years, but the one that they put out there this past Sunday with Essex at left tackle, Ramon Foster at right guard there, boy, that was a pitiful performance, and even Pouncey had a rough day on top of it. I haven't graded the offensive line completely. I'm working on that yet. Looks like Marcus Gilbert very well could have been the star at right tackle, and that's not saying too much.
Yeah. So you pointed out the penalty. I think that one of the plays that has gone a little bit in what I've seen hasn't been talked about very much is at the end of the first half, Steelers down 10-0, put together a drive. And you think, look, if they can put 3 or 7 points on the board here, get the ball to open the second half, they will have been completely dominated for the first 30 minutes with the Texans having 21 minutes of possession, but they'll be within a score getting the ball, and you feel good about things. Antonio Brown, Mike Wallace caught a bunch of passes early in the game, and then wasn't heard from in the second half, but Antonio Brown kind of picked up the slack. He ran a corner route where he was open about 20 yards out in the end zone, and Ben missed him bad. That would have put the Steelers on the board, made it 10-7. They end up having to kick the field goal. As you said, the field goal's blocked, return for a touchdown. Some idiot blocks Sushi in the back when he's not really in the play. Do you remember that play that I'm talking about?
Yeah, the play to Brown, I definitely remember. And, I think didn't that follow the Marquise? Was that before or after the Marquise Pouncey stupid penalty that, a key turning point right there was Mawaldi Moore had the ball down to the 6-yard line there. Under 2 minutes to go. And on that same play, Pouncey's penalized for unnecessary roughness. And then you back the ball up, and then, he misses Brown. Two incomplete balls, actually, to Brown right in a row on 1st and 10 and 2nd and 10. And then, a pass short to Wallace there, and then to set up the field goal attempt with about 7 seconds left, and then they blocked it. But that was a key series of events right there for sure. And there was also the stupid penalty, which we don't know what Mike Wallace said earlier in the game after he caught an early ball and was trash talking. It didn't look like that it was anything more than that, but those stupid penalties really have to stop, especially on a team that is thankful for every yard that they get right now.
Yeah, totally agree. I had forgotten about the Pouncey thing yet, that unnecessary roughness penalty. Ben missing the throw to Brown. Slightly, that's pretty uncharacteristic. He had him open. He was open the whole way, and he had a lot of room to lead him to the sideline. Unfortunately, he let him high and deep and couldn't make the play. Steelers go to the half. Second half, certainly better stuff. I guess the highlights, kind of, if you're looking at player performance, I don't know how skeptical to be about Rashard Mendenhall. 9 carries, 25 yards. Steelers didn't move the ball on the ground. But then you see later in the game, Redmond and Mawaldi come in and actually move the ball a little better. Do you have any takeaway on that?
Mendenhall just does not hit the hole hard enough, it doesn't seem like. He doesn't power run. He seems to be a first contact type of guy inside as well. Now, he runs much better on the outside, and that was evidence on the toss to the right there, on the touchdown.
First toss sweep they've run all year, I think.
Yeah, and David Johnson had a fantastic block on that play as well. I called for it in my pregame write-up there on my 7 things that I do that I basically titled it, "Hey, Diddle Diddle, Send the Running Back Up the Middle." When you have problems with your offensive line, to me, you have to run behind your best offensive line player, and that would be center, of course, Marquise Pouncey. Why not just put a hat on the hat and go after him right up the middle? Redmond, boy, that guy, he runs hard. He runs downhill. He doesn't come down on first contact. He always seems to be falling forward. And the Steelers seemed to, later on in that half, they seemed to feed off of that for a little while, but it was short-lived. They seemed to do better when they had Marcus Gilbert and Ramon Foster kind of keying on a 3-technique defensive tackle there, too. I think that's going to show up strong in the film as well, instead of trying to wash out the center I mean, wash out the nose tackle with both Foster and Pouncey. They seem much better trying to open up the other gap the other way there. But, yeah, nice little boost there by the running game, and I think we'll see more of a Redmond this week. And not saying that Mendenhall is going to lose his job. It just looks like he's been tentative. I've commented in the past that he seems to like to bounce things outside.
Yeah, I mean, just to put numbers on it, Mendenhall, 9 carries, 25 yards. The other two backs, Redmond and Moore, 10 carries, 74 yards. I mean, it's just dramatically different. Now, Mendenhall obviously did most of his work in the first half. The second half, it was a game. It's not like they were killing clock or the Texans were playing soft. This game, the Steelers tied this game up and had a chance. Didn't get it done. We've talked about performance. I thought Ben was okay, not great. Wallace, nothing in the second half. We had the injuries. The running game got a little better, but the defense did shore up a bit. And, you know, they held the Texans held. You know, Foster had 155 yards with a 42-yard run late in the game to steal it for him. So, you know, I don't know what they held. But the Texans losing Andre Johnson, the passing game really went away, 14 for 21, 138 yards for Schaub.
Well, once again, they implemented those great tight ends. That Owen Daniels is a beast, man. I'm here to tell you. This is the second time. Actually, let's see. The Colts really weren't able to use their tight ends that much with Dallas Clark last week. But, you know, week one against the Ravens and now week four against the Texans, we've seen what teams with good packages of tight ends can do. A key sequence of plays that I like to point to in that fourth quarter on that drive there was the Steelers had the Texans on a, you know, held to a 3rd and 6 on the Texans' own 19, and Schaub hit Daniels, you know, for a 9-yard gain there for the first down. On the very next play, Schaub goes to Owen Daniels when he runs that, you know, that route to the outside there, and he's trailed bad by Farrier on the play, and that was a 30-yard completion right there. So now you had them convert a 3rd and 6 to Owen Daniels. You had them a big play for an explosive play for 30 yards to Daniels. And then the very, very next play was the Foster 42-yard backside run that I'm not sure about what Woodley was thinking on the angle he was taking to stop the backside. And when he finally turned around to get caught out, you know, try to make an attempt at a tackle, he ended up washing out Troy Polamalu on the play on top of it. And that was a breakbacker series of 3 plays right in a row there.
Yep, and it just looked like Troy maybe took a bad angle on that as well. You know, you want to see him break down there, I think, rather than go all out. We've really hit the defensive line hard. What was your assessment of the linebackers' play?
They could not fight off the middle linebackers. Both Farrier and Foote had problems shedding blocks up the middle most of the day with that great against that great Texans offensive line, getting to the second level easily. And on runs to the outside, when I think both Foote and Farrier a couple times took very bad angles at Foster. There are a lot of missed tackles in the game as well. You know, when you have both your safeties, both Troy Polamalu and Ryan Clark, lead your team in tackles, that's usually not a good sign. You know, you usually want your linebackers like Timmons or Farrier or Foote, guys like that, doing the job, you know, against the run game there. So they were just gashing up the middle, and the Steelers had no answer for it. Now we move without Harrison, right outside linebacker. You take perhaps your best inside guy. Well, he is your best inside guy in Timmons, kicking him outside. Now you have Foote and Farrier both inside. So I really expect, you know, teams to try to run up the gut against them still.
Yep. Let's recap what Tomlin had to say in general. I mean, I think it's, you know, we've come to kind of take these press conferences with a grain of salt. This one, you know, the news is all the injuries, obviously, but he addressed the game a little bit. And, I think one of the most, one of Tomlin's best characteristics is he doesn't duck anything. He addresses things straight on, and he put the performance on his guys and on his D-line. And, you know, guys just having to step up and play better. That simple.
Well, Yeah, I mean, he tells it like it is. He says they're hacked off in the locker room, and they should be. You know, it sounds – another interesting thing is he says due to stipulation in the CBA, I think one season or 1 week a year they can practice 3 days in pads, and this might be the week to do it. And you have to wonder about, you know, only having a 1 day in pads, especially for a physical team like the Steelers, not being – and I think you hit on this either the last podcast or the podcast before. How much is the inability of not being able to be so physical in practice playing a part on this? Now, a lot of it is indeed technique now and, you know, ability up front. But, you know, the offensive line I can more accept because of the level of talent there. The defensive line and the way the linebackers have played is hard to accept based on the level of talent there, you know. So I don't know what you tell these guys. I mean, hey, you know, what surprises you most, David? Is it play of the linebackers and their defensive line?
No question. I mean, I just from having a run defense where you just knew nobody was getting 100 yards and that, you know, not only a player wasn't getting 100 yards, a team wasn't getting 100 yards. You had two teams last year, I think the whole season, who ran for 100 yards against the Steelers. And just seeing guys get gouged. I mean, from the first play of the season, Ray Rice going off tackle for 27 yards or whatever he went for on that play, watching Foster kind of have a field day, you know, is it, obviously we don't think the scheme is different. So I don't know how much it has to do with the cut blocking that we saw in the first week of the season or if we've just seen a drop-off in Casey. I thought Kiesel's looked good when he's been healthy. So, I mean, I'll put it right on Hampton and Aaron Smith and and, you know, again, Woodley has been, in my eyes, unproductive in 4 weeks of the season. So, and Ferrier's aged. You know, I don't like the whole comment, like, the defense all of a sudden is getting old because Woodley isn't old. Timmons isn't old. They've got guys in there like Ziggy. I don't think it's an age issue, but maybe for particular players it is a quality of play issue. And, you know, the three guys that I see right now are the guys on the left side, you know, Casey, Aaron Smith and Lamar Woodley. They're just running right over.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It has been that side. And, you know, everybody says, okay, you know, for years they've been saying the Steelers are getting old. They're getting old. They're getting old. Well, when you say that long enough for a amount of years, sooner or later it's going to be true. David, you're going to be, you know, you're looking old. Well, you're older than yesterday, you know. Sooner or later you're going to be right on this. And the Steelers have held on to these guys, and we touched on the Aaron Smith thing earlier in the podcast here. You know, it's going to be time for some new blood in here. Hopefully they have drafted well as far as Cameron Hayward goes, but, you know, I think if Keith, you also hit on Kiesel there. I too think Kiesel has played well in his limited time, you know, before he went out with injury. I think he'll be a big boost to that side if he's able to go this week. I think Ziggy Hood is also better suited for the left side. And I'm excited to you know, hopefully see that happen. What happens behind that, Lord knows, especially if Aaron Smith is out, because as I mentioned, you know, Chris Hoke's not an every down outside, you know, technique guy. So you got to be careful there. So they are old, and it starts with Ferrier and Smith, and Hampton just hasn't played well or getting any penetration on a defensive line thus far this season.
Yeah, what about what's your take on the quarterback pressure? You know, we said, you know, Schaub played fine. It wasn't, you know, didn't kill him. But, again, we're not seeing a lot of quarterback pressure.
Well, you know, Woodley hasn't made his mark over on that side so far. They've been horrible about getting pressure. I think I saw Ziggy Hood get a few good instances in there, you know, getting in the face. In fact, I think the one time he drew the illegal hands to the face on a big penalty after I think a big gain by the Texans. I think that might have been early in the game there. But, you know, defensively, they're not getting in pressures. And as far as that game went, supposedly there were 8 quarterback pressures in the game, 3 of them coming from Woodley, but they just weren't impactful, if you ask me. Of course, there was no sacks in the game. Only yep. one quarterback hit, which I think Cameron Hayward had in there. Another thing that we haven't talked about is we still only have one turnover through 4 games, you know, and yep. that was the sack fumble by Harrison in week 3 against the Colts. But they have got to do a better job pressuring the quarterback. You run up against a guy like Matt Hasselbeck this week. This guy's really played well for the Texans, and really, you know, we had this game kind of circled on the calendar before the start of the season. Okay, checking it off. Okay, win there. Right now, you can't really say that, even though they're coming into our place against a ticked-off bunch. He's still dangerous even without Kenny Britt. You know, he's got Nate Washington over there and all, and a good set of tight ends, as Tomlin says. So this is not a gimme this week.
Yeah, no, Tennessee all of a sudden, Hasselbeck, CJ, you know, they've got some skilled guys. They've always been solid defensively. A new system in place. I think the big question mark was a quarterback. And one of the things that they talked about, they asked Matt Hasselbeck why he chose Tennessee. And with Munchak there, you know, his answer was protection. And Munchak, a former, you know, a great offensive lineman himself, has said, look, we're going to play. We're generally going to protect with seven. I'm going to keep my quarterback upright. And Matt Hasselbeck isn't among the elite, but he is a guy with time who has the capability to pick apart a defense. And so we're going to look at some of the same things. You mentioned before they've had trouble running the ball, but they had the talent to run the ball, and if they pass protect, this game was an easy win in August, and we're sitting here in October, and it's anything but.
What do you think about, Dave, what do you think about the offensive line if Jonathan Scott comes back and Doug Legursky comes back this week at right guard?
I'll tell you, the first half of that game, for maybe one of the few times in his career, it did look a bit like Ben was running scared. I mean, he was immediately getting his eyes not downfield. He was looking at what was going on around him, you know, 2 seconds in. We talk about how badly the defensive line got dominated on that first drive. And this is what I say. The positive of this is I thought in the second half they were much better. But, boy, was it duck and cover for Ben in that first half.
Yeah, you know, he made a couple of nice quick throws, and some people will point to why don't they go hurry up offense? Why don't they do a lot of quick throws? You got to remember, we don't have the most athletic offensive line either outside of Pouncey and Legursky when he's in there. They're not a very mobile bunch. Do you really want to gas? You know, you might be gassing a defense, but you're going to be gassing your own guys at the same time. So, you know, kind of think about that. You got to pick your spots to run the no huddle, you know, and hurry up type offenses and all like that. You're really going to lose a lot of Melwaldie Moores out this week. Not only is this guy a good third down back and makes key plays, he's awesome in pass protection, picking up blitzes on third downs. You know, there was a couple of nice back shoulder throws to Antonio Brown. Once again, we saw Antonio Brown miss a hot read. I think this is going to be, probably need to start a list of weekly hot reads missed by Antonio Brown. I think you're bound to have one of them show up every week there. He adds so much, though, outside of that, though, that it's hard to get on to him about. The one thing I didn't like was the fair catch at about the 6 yard line on the punt later in the game. I think you take your chances and let that thing hit. But, you know, as far as the offensive line goes, David, I think Kugler said after the game, was quoted as saying that, you know, you just got to work harder. Well, you know, working hard is only going to get you so far. I think talent plays a whole lot, you know, a bigger role in this, and there just is none outside of, you know, Pouncey and Gilbert, of course, and, you know, Kimoato, if he's not washed out because of the penetration inside. And that's another thing. You know, here's something that you might surprise you as well, too. Kimoato and Foster gave up 9 total quarterback pressures against the Texans, and that was when they kicked those guys inside there, the Watt and the Mario Williams. But, you know, there was pressure allowed all over the place, but it was more prevalent up the gut and, you know, against the guards.
Yeah, you could tell that Essex, I don't know the line call specifically, but it certainly looked like he and Kimoato had some miscommunications there on the left side a couple times, guys coming free either inside or outside, getting pressure on Ben. But, yeah, you referenced Kugler's comments, and I think the answer to that is it's the old Rick Pitino line that, you know, You know, Larry Bird and Parrish and McHale aren't walking in that door. Well, for the Steelers, I think Kugler is basically saying, look, we got to play with the guys we have, talent level or not talent level. We know that maybe these guys aren't that talented, but there's nothing we can do about it. We got to make them better, and that's coaching, that's working hard, that's whatever it is. But certainly you'd like to have some continuity there. Moving guys in and out of the line obviously affects that, affects those line calls. And the best guys in the world, if you guys are if they're missing reads, it doesn't matter how talented you are, guys are going to come free and they're going to kill your quarterback.
You know, the thing about that too, it wasn't like they were doing any crazy stunts or you know, any sophisticated stuff. They were just basic stunts and twists. You know, as far as what the Texans were doing, very plain vanilla type stuff, and they were having problems picking that up. You know, Trey Essex makes Jonathan Scott look like a Pro Bowler right now, the way he played. Hopefully that's the last time we see him at left tackle there. I don't know, man. At some point, I don't know if you just say, hey, let's move Gilbert over to the left side, although he was run blocking real well, I thought, on right tackle. We just are underestimating the loss of Willie Colon right now, how huge it is for a second season in a row. Losing him is just really handcuffed this offensive line, especially with their strengths of what they like to do, and that's run to the right side. And Gilbert's getting there, but he's just not there yet.
Yeah, I think you know, it's a good point, and you made you made this point initially when Colon went down, and I maybe downplayed it, but I think the bigger point is it's not that Willie Colon is necessarily an All-Pro. It's that the guys you have at 7 and 8 on the depth chart, or in this case 2, but your 7th and 8th offensive linemen are not really NFL caliber offensive linemen. And so you got to go to Gilbert, which didn't necessarily mean Gilbert's play was that much substandard than Colon's. But what we've seen now is you get Scott hurt, you get Ligurski hurt, and you got to go to Foster, you got to go to Essex, and God forbid we have to go deeper than that, because you know, then they might as well just have tryouts at somewhere on the north side. You know, come one, come all, and let's see what we got. Because we're seeing that, you know, they keep drafting for offensive linemen, and obviously they hit a home run with Pouncey, but we go back to the kid that they released last year from Nebraska who went to the Bills. They had a kid from Nebraska this year who didn't make the team. You know, just haven't produced a whole lot of quality guys, and we haven't seen Scott really step up. We saw Tony Hills look like maybe he was going to be a guy who could do the job this year, surprisingly, and then unsurprisingly, he got cut. So, you know, it's a depth and a talent issue. Clearly, coming into the season, the two things we focused on were corner and offensive line. And corner play from William Gay and Keenan Lewis has been certainly solid enough. And that's not the reason of the problem. But as you said, if you're running the ball all day long, you don't really have to pass the ball as much. But Ike did a decent job on Andre Johnson when he was in there. I thought Gay, again, what he does well is, you know, rush the passer out of the five, the nickelback slot technique. And he's not we've had some trouble covering tight ends, but really it's this team is predicated on defensive pressure and stopping the run, and they're not getting either. And, you know, like you said, that game could have been 31-7, 31-10, and the Steelers were lucky to be in it and really, you know, have a chance to win the game late. Didn't happen. And now it's everybody, all Steeler fans should be on high alert. This game against the Titans, they're a good team. The Steelers aren't playing Steeler football. So, you know, these 2 weeks and then going to Arizona will certainly tell us, you know, I was pointing to this Texans game as being a very informative game for both teams. The information for the Texans, generally good. The information for the Steelers, generally bad.
Yeah, you've got some interesting weeks coming up here right now. You got Tennessee, then you have Jacksonville, and then Arizona before, you know, New England comes to town. So, yeah, you better figure it out quick, because after that, you know, you go back after the New England game, I think you go into division there. Again, I think the Ravens coming up, when is that? That's week 9 is the Ravens. So you've got a couple of weeks here, you know, although not gimmies, to figure this stuff out. And, you know, the offensive, let's face it, the offensive line is what it is. I mean, look, you're just going to have to deal with that. I said last week, don't expect Max Starks or Flo Zeller to be re-signed. It's just not going to happen, in my opinion. The defensive line against the run and getting pressure on the quarterback is where you can make significant improvements and change some ball games. They're going to have to start forcing turnovers and start giving the offense short fields, and the offense is going to have to capitalize on those short fields and not give the ball back. It's so simple, you know, it's stupid sometimes when you boil these things down. You know, if you would look at the scoreboard up there and not known what happened in that game Sunday, you'd swear, well, you know, the Texans, we were probably going to lose to them. We knew it was a tough game. Well, at least the Steelers played them close. That wasn't the case.
That's an excellent point. And, David, we look at individual performances, and one of the things about turnovers is they can mask a lot of things or they can exacerbate a lot of things. And the Steelers have been very good at generating turnovers, and that's a skill. Some of it is random variance and luck and stuff like that, but you get pressure on quarterbacks, you cause them to throw early, you cause them to throw high, you cause them to have interceptions. You tackle aggressively, you have a lot of guys around the ball, you knock balls loose, you have guys around the ball, you recover fumbles. The Steelers are minus 10. That's extraordinary. That is an extraordinary number after 4 weeks of the season, and I say that as a positive. If you want to look at something and say, good God, this team is 2-2 with a minus 10 turnover differential. They've played two very good teams in the AFC on the road. Well, I mean, it's not all hope is lost. I mean, there's still a fair amount of – there's tons of talent offensively in the skills positions. These guys defensively have done it over the years, so there's no reason to believe that necessarily it all got lost at once. And if you flip that turnover variance around, or if they finish the season around zero, net zero in the turnover department, they're going to win a lot more football games. So, you pointed it out, and the reasons those things happen, and it's not random variance. It is quality of play and caliber of play. But, yeah, if they can generate some turnovers, get some short fields, we should see things turn. It is these 3 weeks right here. The Steelers, they need to win all three of these games. Right now, you can't think the Steelers are one of the 10 best teams in football. They're certainly the second-best team in their division. The Ravens looked very good again on Sunday night, just handing it to the Jets. But, you want to talk
to Pam. Outside of Flacco, boy, the quarterback play was miserable in that game.
Yeah, right.
But they do the other things on defense, that they're supposed to do. The damn defense scored three damn times. Now, was Flacco just off in that game? Boy, miserable quarterback play in that game. But go ahead, I get your point.
But we're panicking a little bit. But you just look around the NFL again, and we talk about it, and you think you have the league figured out, and every year it's different teams. But, Buffalo loses at Cincinnati. If you're the Eagles and you're an Eagle fan, you're killing yourself. I mean, you just had a 23-3 lead. You blew a 20-point lead at home. That's a disaster. They're 1-3. You see Atlanta, again, have a big lead and almost lose to Seattle. The teams that look very good, Green Bay looks very good and solid. New Orleans looks pretty good. San Diego, they didn't coast, but we saw them do some good things. But it's not easy in the NFL. Every team has good players, and it really almost is as simple as on any given Sunday. And we're seeing it throughout the league again. So what we need to see the Steelers do is take care of two games at home here. What do we got, a game away? We got Arizona. Is Arizona next or Jacksonville next?
Jacksonville's after Tennessee.
Yeah, so we got two games at home that we should win, and then you play an Arizona team that they're familiar with. You're going away, but if I were betting, you'd bet that the Steelers be 4-3 after seven games. But there's a damn good chance they're 5-2. The problem is if they're 3-4, they got big issues.
Yeah, especially coming up against, as I mentioned, you got New England and Baltimore on the schedule after that.
Right, because then you're really staring at it.
Yeah, you are going to be staring at a big hole. I'm with you if they can get through these next three games, okay? If they can go even 2-1 in these next three games and be that would make you, 4-3 at that time?
Yeah.
If you're able to fix some problems along the way there, but let's face it, I mean, they really do need to win all three of these games. Then you're at 5-2. Maybe you fix those problems, and you got big games against Baltimore and New England there. And both those franchises, we still don't know 100% what they are. New England likes to give up the big play. They can still put points up on the scoreboard. God knows what's happening on, with Baltimore on offense right now and Flacco, and their defense was opportunistic, a bad quarterback play. They have some injuries in their secondary as well, too. So, you know, you could get yourself into a foot race if you can get through the first half of this season with just two or three losses there, because I think the backside after this middle part of the schedule gets you know, quote-unquote easier. But, you know, as we've seen thus far through 4 weeks, there's been nothing easy about it.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, you need the Steelers to – you need them to get 5 wins through 9 games because, as you said, after you get the Pats in Baltimore, you got Cincinnati twice, you've got Cleveland twice, you got Kansas City, San Francisco, and St. Louis. And, you know, the only realistically good team on that list, I mean, depending on what you think of the Browns, is San Francisco. So this is the time to make hay. This is also, Dave, I think we don't talk about this enough in the NFL – because we talk about it in a lot of other sports and a lot of other areas. This is a chance for the coaching staff to make an imprint. They've got to coach these guys up. They have Kugler and Tomlin. They've got to coach up that offensive line. Arians has got to come up with schemes that allow Ben to do things with a beat up offensive line. And defensively, LeBeau's got to now dial up. Look, we've criticized and critiqued the linebackers and D-line play, and LeBeau has a track record. And I, you know, the last thing in the world I'm going to do is you know, bang Dick LeBeau. But I'm going to say it's now time for him to come up. If this stuff isn't working and he thinks it's a scheme issue rather than personnel, you got to start thinking about how you're going to do things differently to generate more stuff. And I don't know if that's, you know, having Troy down in the box more, having Troy come more often, you know, utilizing some different different zone blitzing techniques. We haven't seen a ton of the X splits, which used to be the main staple of the defense, bringing the two inside backers. But, they got to find ways to get more pressure.
Yeah, they got to make quarterbacks beat them under duress. You know, your good ones are going to do it. We know that they are, but there's just a handful of these. And then Matt Schaub, you know, he as adequate as he's been, I don't put him in that elite level. If you would have got pressure on Matt Schaub this past week, I think you'd force him into turnovers. Same with Matt Hasselbeck this week. He's not elite status. If you pressure him and make him put, you know, the ball, make him make reads that he you know, he's not used to seeing and put the ball in small windows, that's when your turnovers are going to happen. I'm with you. I think LeBeau's got to mix some of this up. I think we need to see more blitzes than we have. If that means putting your cornerbacks on the island, you know, by bringing Troy up and more often, this guy can change a ball game is what he's good at. Why not let him do it?
Yep. Well, Dave, we got the Titans on Sunday at Heinz Field. As we said, we're having a slightly different schedule this week. We'll be back at you on Thursday with one of the beat writers from Tennessee on with us, and then we'll have our game preview and our picks on Friday. Anything you want to wrap up with?
Yeah, just follow us on Twitter, all the usual places, at Steelers Depot, at Terrible Podcast, at Hammer Speaks. Subscribe on iTunes, please, if you will, and please share the word. And we're sorry about the mishap yesterday. No presser. David had some stuff to take care of there, but we'll be back on schedule next week, and make sure to tune into the show Thursday.
Yep, and the one thing I wanted to add there was make sure you're getting to, for all your latest and greatest Steeler information. Dave, as you know, does a fantastic job with that website. Not a lot of breaking stuff in the NFL, except for days like today where it's injury news. But not only does Dave do some great writing, he amalgamates and collates everything, and it's a great resource. So SteelersDepot.com for all your Steeler information. That's going to wrap up episode number 25, season 2 of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.